This Week in Retronauts, the episode so advanced it had to sit in self-diagnostic mode for 100 years. Hi, everyone. Welcome to another jolly episode of Retronauts. I'm your amusing host, Jeremy Parrish. And with me, we have a wonderful cast of motley people talking about video games. Guys, just take this. I'm already having trouble.
Hey, it's Bob Mackey, and I still don't know what a coanger is.
Hi, I'm Kat Bailey. I became a super intelligent being that is trying to take over the world.
And this is a Bubble Crab super fan, Brett Elston.
Ooh. Bubble Crab, that's the wrong game, buddy.
I got to sneak it in when I can, though.
This is a deep dive into Mega Man X. Just Mega Man X. The first one.
No
not
Duff
the sequels.
McWhalen or whatever?
No Duff McWhalen.
Damn it.
No,
I have to leave
no,
now.
What was the Ground Scarevich, the dung beetle who attacked Mega Man with robot poop?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we're not talking about any of that. We're talking about the good one. We're talking about the one that is pretty much a perfect video game. I can't think of much about the original Mega Man X that I would change or alter or say this needs to be better in any sense.
I agree. I think it's the best 2D Mega Man game.
I
stand by that.
I like Mega Man 2 more because of nostalgia, and I can basically like play Quick Man's Laser Grid in my sleep with my eyes closed because I'm asleep. But I feel like Mega Man X is the best designed Mega Man game. It is the high watermark of 2D Mega Man game design. I'm not saying 3D because you've got Mega Man Legends in there and I love that game so much. Mm. But yes, Mega Man X is fantastic. And, you know, we've talked about Mega Man games in the past, but we mostly – actually, I guess it's been like 2 years and Brett was here for that. That was – back when the Mega Man Legacy Collection was announced. Mm-hmm. We talked about the Mega Man series and the Legend series as kind of overviews. We haven't really talked about X before, and we haven't done any single game deep dives into a Mega Man game. But this, I think if any game can hold up to that scrutiny, it is the original Mega Man X, which came out in, I want to say, January 1994. It was right at the beginning of 94 in the US. And really kind of was a breath of fresh air for a series that was kind of starting to feel samey and repetitive. It just totally changed everything, and it really did feel like, you know, they could have called this Super Mega Man instead of Mega Man X, which probably would have worked better because everyone is like, Mega Man 10? But I just played Mega Man 4.
I was one of those who played this. And by the way, hi, I'm Kat Bailey. I'm also here.
Oh, my God.
Hello.
You didn't introduce yourself.
I thought she did. No, she did. You said you're going to take over the world or something.
Oh, God, I totally did.
Yes.
I'm bad at this
check
podcast.
The tapes, check the tapes.
All right. This is boding well for the rest of the
episode. You mentioned 1994, Jeremy, and I played this game. I played through it all last night and this morning, and seeing 1994 on the title screen surprised me because I thought this was an earlier game. Mm-hmm. They waited a long time to make a Mega Man 16-bit game, which surprised me. Like, I forgot how long they took to make this game, which maybe is evident in how well it's put together.
It's kind of surprising because it does – yeah, when I think back on it, it does feel like a game more – like I think of it more as coming out at the same time as Star Fox, but it was almost a year later.
Yeah.
So for whatever reason, it took that long. And
I think that's because the Nintendo Power cover prominently mentioned Star Fox, but I could be wrong.
No, I mean like just thinking back like in terms of contemporaries for this game, but it just seemed kind of inevitable, I guess. I guess I wasn't really paying that much attention to game releases like – of the moment at that point. Mm-hmm. So it kind of snuck in right after Secret of Mana.
Yeah,
like, but that's okay. Like it was inevitable that there was going to be a Super NES Mega Man. But this was not what I expected it to be. It was so much better.
Yeah, and the precedent that had been kind of set at that point was, hey, when Castlevania comes over, when Contra comes over, when all these other third-party hits from the NES days come over, it's usually just – and I don't mean this in a bad way, but it's like it's the next one. It's kind of the same world, the same cast, you know, slightly remixed, whatever. But like it was more or less – a super version of that, whereas X was, hey, it's not Mega Man 5 or 6. It's a new timeline, new characters. Like it just felt so much more than a lot of the other leaps from 8 to 16.
Yes, compared to Super Castlevania 4, which came out almost right away and was essentially a remake of the original game with, I mean, the same characters. I mean, it was very different at the end of the day. But, I mean, in terms of setting, it was just a more advanced version of the original NES game.
Yeah. So because this is a Mega Man game, I'm going to handle this episode a little differently. It's not going to be a linear stroll through my bullet points. You have 8 selections here, and you can choose from 8 selections.
I saw. But how do I use one of the selections against the next one?
So can I read them out?
There you go.
So I need the cursor sound effect here to make
I'll,
it complete.
I'll actually add the music in there. Ba-dink, ba-dink, ba-dink. Okay, so sure, Kat, why don't you read the 8 selections all on a title screen or a menu screen? So
this is actually really cool. He like totally made this like a total Mega Man X menu screen. But Mega Man History, the dev team, X, Mavericks, Sigma, the stages, Zero, and game mechanics.
I think the dev team is weak to game mechanics.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Is weak to game mechanics?
Yes, I'm deciding their weaknesses.
So we start with game mechanics right now?
I don't want to make this decision.
So we can beat the dev team with the Mega Buster?
Too much responsibility. Yes, exactly.
I think that's a good starting point.
Okay, so dev team?
Yep, I choose dev team. Ding-ding-ding-ding.
Mega Man X development team actually wasn't that different than the Mega Man 4 development team. This game came immediately after 4, and I think it was developed sort of in tandem with 5. But let's see, 4 was 1992, I want to say?
I think 4 is 91, 5, 92, 6, 93. There's
So this was developed contemporaneously with 6 then.
Yes, the first teaser for Mega Man X was in, I think, a magazine that also featured Mega Man 6 in Japan. So,
well, the people who worked on Mega Man X, for the most part, didn't work on Mega Man 5 or 6. Mm. So I think you know, this was where the core Mega Man team's attention shifted, and they let kind of like the young whippersnappers or maybe an external contractor even work on 5 and 6. I don't know exactly. I haven't looked that closely into the circumstances of those games' creations. But as the dev team, you have as the producer none other than Tokuro Fujiwara, who was basically Capcom's golden child throughout the 80s. I mean, if you look at a big arcade smash from the mid to late 80s from Capcom, his name is probably attached. You know, Yoshiki Okamoto left the company pretty early on. So once Okamoto left, Fujiwara was kind of like the big name. He designed Commando, Bionic Commando, Ghosts and Goblins, the original Mega Man. Like, those were all kind of his creations. There's always kind of this distinctive look about his games, a little like little squat, a little chubby, a little cartoonish, but also like punch you in the testicles hard.
He formed
whatever
Whoopi
your
Camp.
Equivalent is.
He formed Whoopi Camp, correct?
He did. Yes.
Tomba 2, and then nothing.
Tomba has his visual style.
Definitely,
also.
Definitely.
No, he's worked on other stuff more recently. But
I meant Whoopi Camp is defunct.
Oh yeah,
that's where Swery started, by the way.
That's right. It is. So Fujiwara, of course, had been the producer on the original Mega Man and had sort of guided the series since then, and so it made sense for him to oversee development of this game. But what we probably need to talk about are the game designers, which in 1994 parlance is the directors. And there were 4 of them. That's a whole lot of people. So you have Masayoshi Kurokawa, who is the designer on Strider and the planner on Mega Man 3. And I feel like His influence is very strong in this game. Like, spiritually, it feels very similar in a lot of ways to sort of the cinematic platforming of the arcade version of Strider. Mm. And there are a lot of stages that really remind you of Mega Man 3. Like like Spark Mandrel stage is very similar to sort of the light dark of
Sparkman,
yes. Yeah. Thank you.
Just take the drill off and you're good.
So exactly. Any of these guys, are they listed as planners? Or is there a planner on this game? Because I usually associate that with kind of the director role of this era.
No, there are designers but no planners.
Okay,
so I'm taking the designers to be the directors.
You're right about that.
You know, the fourth director here is Keiji Inafune. So he was like the co-director on the game. So that's pretty much what you need to know. Of course, Inafune, you know that guy, right?
Mm. Okay. Oh, he's the Mighty Number 9 guy.
Yes, him. This was actually just his third gig directing a game. He had directed DuckTales for NES. That was the first time he had been the designer on a game as opposed to a graphic artist, and Mega Man 4. Then there was Shosuke, and I couldn't really find much information on this guy. Brett, do you know anything?
No.
Mr. Capcom?
No? Yeah. My databanks are not fully charged for that deep a dive Capcom lore.
So you're saying you didn't just have lunch with him last week?
No, okay. I missed that. We're supposed to catch up.
All right. And finally, there's Yoshinori Takenaka, who was a co-director on DuckTales, the designer on Mega Man 3, and did planning on Magic Sword. So these guys were all – like they had their hands in some of the biggest, most ambitious games of that era for Capcom. There's – you know, it's like – it's this game is made by some people who had a lot of experience and had been responsible for creating some really cool stuff. So I guess it makes sense that Mega Man X was very, very good.
I wonder if they had more time for this game, because as much as we all love Mega Man 2 and 3, I feel like those games did have rush development cycles and are clearly missing some things or have a little bit of padding to them. And I just wonder if this was granted a little more time, because it does feel like, like you said, Jeremy, the perfect Mega Man game.
This has a much larger staff role than the NES Mega Man games. So I feel like you had more resources being thrown at it. And so let's see. The dev team came over from Mega Man 4, which again came out in 1991. This game came out at the end of 1993 in Japan, beginning of 94 here. So that's probably 2 years that they had. I mean, if you look at their bibliographies, there is kind of this gap in there between Mega Man 4, that stuff, of, you know, like 1991 games, and Mega Man X. So yeah, I think that they were kind of, you know, really heavily invested in this game and took the time to make it worthwhile. I could be mistaken, but no, I think you're right. I think this game had a lot more time given to it, and, you know, the NES games had been sort of annualized.
But that does feel like the start of an early Capcom tradition where if a series is stagnating or getting less interest, they will take a lot of time to sort of relaunch it. Like Resident Evil, that happened twice with that series, mm-hmm. and this feels like a kind of a relaunch of Mega Man after 6.
Right. And they kind of kept it going on the NES because there were still two more games or another game or two that came out. I think also Rock Board, That's Paradise, came out around the same time on Famicom. So that's, you know, they hadn't given up on the 8-bit games, but those were very much like, you know, stamp them on the assembly line and ship them out.
Whereas it's the game of life or something, right? Rock Board?
Kind of like that, yeah. Whereas this was, you know, this was a chance for the devs to step back and say, let's really get it right. And they did, and it's great. And then it was annualized again and started to sort of stagnate. All right, so that's the dev team. Next up, next stage.
Oh boy, so we got the dev team.
So as a reminder, there's Mega Man History, Game Mechanics, X, Zero, Mavericks, The Stages, and Sigma. So who is weak to the dev team?
I feel like the dev team is going to know all about the game mechanics.
All right.
So their knowledge would make short work of those game mechanics.
Reinventing the mechanics. Well, you guys know how Mega Man X plays, right? It's pretty much Mega Man, right?
Hey, jump and shoot.
Yeah. And later, jump, slide, slide. No, wait, yeah, that was the original Mega Man. Never mind. Mm. Well, Mega Man X doesn't slide.
Does not
he
slide.
Dashes. That's
better.
A big change. Yep. So, yeah, they took the basics of Mega Man, running, jumping, shooting, a forward momentum action, and, of course, capturing enemy weapons. And then completely rethought how they worked. The game feels a lot different than the NES games. The sprite for X is larger on screen, which they also did with like Mega Man 7 in a way that didn't quite work, I feel. Mm. It's just a little – he's a little too big and everything feels too claustrophobic. But this one hits it just right. It helps that the action is slower. X is a slower game than the classic NES Mega Man games. So you have a little more time to react and – a little more time to kind of take stock of a situation and scoot around.
One thing that really works about Mega Man X is, much like Mega Man 9, actually, the weapons are extremely useful outside of just boss battles. Stuff like the Storm Tornado is a very effective weapon, just an all-rounder. But stuff like the Boomerang from Boomer Kwanger can be used to grab stuff and bring it over to Mega Man. And I think that the hallmark of a really good Mega Man game is one that puts in just an extra bit of thought into the weapons that you get.
I agree. Like when I played these games as a kid, I would be weirdly conservative about using those enemy powers. Like, no, those are only for bosses.
Because they had a bar. Yes. Even though they give you tons of power-ups to replace them and everything.
But I think this was the first time I played through using these weapons. And I got to say, I think the Flame Mammoth Fire Flamethrower is sort of like the metal blade. It just kills everything
really?
In its path.
Hmm.
It's a very short range weapon, but it just tears through everything almost
instantly.
It's so great. I love it. But yeah, I was using my weapons creatively this time to figure out how to take out enemies without using the Buster. And they do a good job of that here.
I will also say that the Buster works a lot better here than in Mega Man 4. You know, Mega Man 4 introduced the charge shot. And I feel like the games weren't the NES games weren't really balanced very well around charging. It just never quite felt right. Whereas this game, it really does feel like they took the overpowered nature of the charge shot into account. And there are times where it actually kind of works against you. Like you go up against Armored Armadillo and you think, oh, well, he's going to be really tough, so I need to hit him with charge shots. And so you charge up a shot when you first go into the room to shoot him. And as soon as the action starts, you let go of the fire button and your charge shot releases and hits him and it dings him for 1 point of damage. And you're like, well, I could do that same amount of damage just by shooting him. So it forces you to play a different way.
Yeah.
And you're constantly being forced to kind of analyze how you're performing and how your weapons are affecting enemies and say, is there a better way to do this?
And I think, was this the first instance of the weapons making a cosmetic change to the boss or affecting them in a visual way? Like the electric spark for Armored Armadillo would actually like knock the pads off and like
I think it
spark
is.
Spark
yeah.
Mandrill actually freezes.
Yeah. You can tell when each boss is being hit by its you know the weapon that's strong against it because it does affect it in a different way.
And like it makes a different noise too. It makes a distinct noise when you find out the weakness.
Yeah. And the one I will say the one thing that is maybe questionable about the balance of this game is that when you figure out that weakness, the bosses go down like, you know, paper dolls. They're ridiculously weak and you can get them into like a stun lock and take them out without even them being able to perform actions. Like, you know, Chill Penguin goes up to pull the chain at the top of the ceiling. And if you hit him with his weakness, which is, I think, Spark Mandrill's weapon
Spark Mandrill's for Armored Armadillo. I don't –
trying to remember.
Because I always start with Chill Penguin.
Me
I'm
too.
Assuming,
yeah.
I'm assuming Flame Mammoth.
Actually, this game is kind of screws with your head in that the elemental weaknesses you think will work never do. Which is like fire is not weak to ice. Spark is weak to ice.
I put this under
strange.
The bosses, but that's okay. We can talk about it here because, yeah, I do think that you have to rethink how you approach the bosses with their weapons and figure out which is weak to them. It's not usually about like elemental weaknesses because, you know, what is an armadillo's element, I guess ground, I don't know, or a chameleon. What is that? Grass? Okay, that's not an element. So you have to think about like how does this weapon behave and how would it behoove me to fight the boss with it? And so I feel like, okay, we can talk about this here. So you have like Spark Mandrill who's weak to shotgun ice. And he controls the space in the stage. Like he's very aggressive. He moves around a lot. It's really hard to stand and take a shot at him because he's constantly coming at you and forcing you to evade. And then when you try to stick to walls, he like fires a big charge spark that circles the room and knocks you off the walls. So it's really hard to shoot him. But if you equip Shotgun Ice has a secondary effect where when it hits a wall, the projectile explodes and reflects back in four directions. It like creates an arc. So if you are running away from him, you can shoot the wall and it'll splash back and hit him no matter where he is on the screen. So that's like, you know, suddenly it becomes this really effective weapon. Sting Chameleon likes to cling to the top of the stage, hang from the top of the stage, and it's really hard to get a beat on him because he likes to move around and disappears. But when he does that, if you use the weapon that he's weak to, which is Boomer Kwanger's boomerang, that has a pattern where it shoots forward and then arcs back upward and goes off the screen. Instead of coming back to Mega Man, it arcs off and shoots off the screen above you. So you can face away from him and the boomerang will arc up and hit him when he's on the screen if you're just running around on the ground avoiding his projectiles. Mm. So you start to think about like how does this weapon work as opposed to like what is the magic attribute to mm-hmm. this game? And suddenly everything starts to make sense and you're like, oh, wow, this is really designed to give me advantages over the bad guys.
Yeah. I think that plays into a thing that I really like about Mega Man X is that it takes the concept of optional difficulty even further than the traditional Mega Man games. And one of the way that embodied is in the optional armor parts, where if you collect all of the optional armor parts, you can become so overpowered that you'll just rip through the game with ease. But if you opt to not really power up, you can have yourself an extremely difficult challenge, which is really great for hardcore fans. I think – and that the seed of that was in the original Mega Man where, yeah, you could use these really overpowered weapons to take out a boss in a few hits. But the real hallmark of a great player was Buster Dueling, and I think Mega Man X takes that to the next level.
There are a bunch of things that X adds to sort of the pantheon of skills. The first is the wall jump. Like mm-hmm. You'll almost certainly discover this in the very first introductory stage, which, by the way, is a new thing here, an introductory stage before you get to the stage select screen. We can talk about that later. But the wall jump is a lifesaver here because if you jump and you miss a platform, instead of just falling into a pit and dying, game over, you can grab onto a wall. And mm-hmm. instead of just plummeting down to your death, you hold onto the wall and you slide down slowly and you can push yourself off against the wall. And you can, you know, use that to climb shafts and things like that. You can use it. It's really helpful against bosses because it opens up a new dimension in boss battles. You're mm-hmm. not just on the ground avoiding their shots. You're also like leaping up to the walls and, you know, climbing up to avoid the enemies who control the ground a lot.
Yeah, it was – as a kid, it reminded me – it made me feel like, wow, this is like Ninja Gaiden Mega Man where I can do all the ground-based attacks that I had before, but – you know, like Ryu, I can now get on the wall and this whole verticality that wasn't there before is now part of not just the boss battles, but like the whole sense of the stages being not rooms that you kind of navigate and jump and hop and platform around, but instead these big open spaces that it's all about dashing, wall jumping, and then wall dashing and chaining those things together. Like it just felt so fast and freeing. And then that kind of evolved into the Zero series where it gets even crazier.
Yeah, this is probably the most satisfying wall jump in a video game, mm-hmm. I think, at least I can think of now. And every boss except for Chill Penguin, and I think this game wants you to start with Chill Penguin because why would you go through this entire game without the dash from that stage? But
yeah.
He is the only boss that does not have a way to get you out of the upper corner by hiding in the upper corner. He's the only one that has no way to attack you mm-hmm. if you wall jump to the upper corner.
And he's actually very vulnerable when you're up there. If you charge up a shot and you, when you fire and you're holding onto a wall, you automatically fire away from the wall. So you can basically just like cling to that corner and shoot him. The most recent time I played this, you know, getting ready for this episode, I actually started with Armored Armadillo. And it turned out to be a huge mistake because he's really hard. But
he's tough.
Every enemy has a pattern. And I did beat him with just the Buster no like health upgrades or anything.
That's
and
really
I was
impressive.
Like, wow, I even got it on video. I should post that to the internet.
We're talking about bosses. I feel like I'm heaping great praise upon this game. But this has some of the most satisfying boss patterns too.
We'll talk about that in the boss section.
I'm playing Cuphead and I'm having a lot of memories about this.
So I want to get back to what Brett was saying earlier about the kind of sense of verticality that the dash imparts. Not only does it give you a huge amount of just momentum, which is simply lacking in other Mega Man games, it also really opens things up a lot. And so much of Mega Man X's like pleasure is in finding the secret items and everything. And the dash and the wall jump are a huge part of it and combining those. Mm-hmm. And it's really amazing. And you simply could not do that without those things. It makes the levels much more interesting.
The dash on its own is not that interesting. The wall jump on its own is good but not that interesting. But when you realize like the reason they changed away from a slide attack to the dash attack so that you can do air dashes. Like it doesn't make sense to slide in midair, but a dash, yeah, sure, why not? You've got like rocket boots and you're streaking across.
And it turns
so
into
being
this
able to like climb up and jump off a wall way up at the ceiling and then dash across the top of the room to avoid an enemy – it's like, wow, this really does open up a new dimension.
And there's so many – there's two things that strikes in me is one is the many leaps of faith you'll make where you're like, I think there's something all the way to the left here or all the way to the right beyond what I would think is a normal border of the stage. But like in Storm Eagle, you can – right off the top of the stage, right when you start, you can jump to the left with a dash and like, hey, there's a sub tank over here. And I wouldn't have really thought to do that if this dash wasn't encouraging me to go explore and just like jump and see what happens.
Yeah, the new mechanics really add a lot to the game design, not only the way you play, but just also how the levels work. And the levels become a lot less like, you know, here's a hallway, here's a shaft.
The
original Mega Man games, they become more like places. And we'll talk about that in the stage level or the stage section.
All right.
But I did want to go back to the wall jump just because I do feel like this is kind of where you see the influence of Strider come into the game. Mm-hmm. And it feels like this is where they got that idea right. Like the original Strider in the arcade, Strider could jump on – or Hiryu could jump on the wall and stick to it and kind of hang off and slash at stuff. But it was very much that Ninja Gaiden style where you stick to the wall – and you have to kind of push yourself away. Here it has a sort of an energy and dynamism because you don't just stick to the wall. You do still obey gravity and it's still pulling you down. But it allows you to make these tiny little hops upward. You're not kicking off necessarily against the wall to go the other direction. It gives you the ability to climb. And that makes a big difference because it does give you the ability to like scale surfaces and opens up different ways to approach levels, and it makes you say like, I see something up there. Can I get up there? And you probably can. Mm-hmm. You might have to use the dash, but
– and there's like some areas later in the stage or later in the game, like some of the Sigma areas where you're like – you'll see, well, that's too many spikes. I can't possibly navigate around that. And then you do it after like some trial and error as classic Mega Man would always force upon you. But when you do it, it just again teaches you – I can really experiment with this and chain moves together, which that's just not present in the old games.
Right. So we mentioned the dash, but we didn't really talk about like how it's introduced. But you don't start out with the dash, whereas in Mega Man 3, you start with the slide. Mega Man 4, you start with the slide and the charge shot. Here you start out with the charge shot and the wall jump. So it's a different kind of sandbox of abilities. You have to go find the Dr. Light capsule that gives you the dash parts upgrade, and then you can dash. So it kind of lets you ease into the game before you get this advanced technique. And the dash works a little differently than sliding. It's a way to get you forward with, you know, extra momentum, and it does cause you to sort of lower your height so you can go under certain projectiles. But you can't use it quite as much to like slide through gaps, and so the levels are designed differently. They don't have as many like low ledges and places where you have to slide and kind of, you know, infinitely go back and forth trying to avoid spikes and things like that, like in Mega Man 3. It's a different feel to it. And again, like I really feel like a big part of the design is meant to chain into wall jumps and sort of give you more combat options as opposed to navigation, which is what sliding is really for.
I think we would be remiss if we didn't mention the Hadouken, which is an amazing Easter egg that you can totally get.
That's in the Mega Man section.
Oh, my apologies.
It's okay.
There's a Mega Man section?
Mega Man X. The one other thing in terms of game mechanics that I wanted to talk about is the introductory stage. Like everything else about Mega Man X structure, level design-wise, feels pretty much orthodox in terms of the Mega Man series. Like you have 8 stages, you can pick any direction or pick to start on anyone, go through like them in any sequence you want. There's an ideal sequence, okay. And then after you beat all those, then you fight through the villain's 4 final stages. But what's new here is the introductory stage where you start the game and it's basically in medias res. And it's a really cool stage because it has an element of storytelling that Mega Man had never had before. There was some storytelling sort of built into the arrangement of the stages in Mega Man 1 and 2 especially. Mm. Like if you look at that ridiculous Mega Man 1 box art, you see like Dr. Wily's horrible looking fortress and you realize like, oh, that's a gross depiction of what I'm actually doing, like the big bridge across the top leading between 2 tall structures. Mega Man 2, you're actually like infiltrating Wily's castle, his skull fortress from beneath, like through catacombs and through the maintenance system. Mm-hmm. And when you stop to realize that, you're like, oh, that's kind of cool. But this takes it to a different degree and really like plays up the fact that, hey, there's more happening in this world than Mega Man fighting some bad robots. There's all kind – like people live in this world.
Yeah, and they start to build an actual universe where like, hey, this city has a name. I don't think they named the city just yet. I think that
is it Monstropolis?
This is a new Monstropolis.
Monstropolis X.
But like just that this is a city and this is a highway in that city and there's people and there's a commute that people have to go through. It's not just like all wacky fun – you know, cartoon robots fighting each other.
They're not commuting. They're getting the hell out of there.
They are
they're
trying
escaping.
To get out of town. But it
you're rushing against the flow of traffic as everyone tries to escape from a city under siege.
And this,
you're like, no, I got to go save the world.
Car's exploding.
Yeah, like in the engine that idles when you blow the top off the car, the little detail of the engine just idling in the sprite. But this opening stage, one, the music is excellent.
Oh, yeah.
And it services the on-screen action perfectly where it's this very driving move forward, but like a little more guitar shreddy than any of the Mega Man classic games had
this
been.
This is like the template for future Capcom music. It's so butt rock. And you never really had that in Capcom music before, but all of a sudden –
up to that point.
Yeah.
But I think – at the time, it struck me again as like how, you know, quote unquote cool this game was, where they really nailed a cool feeling that was not synonymous with the Super Nintendo at all. It was way more, at least in America, that was a Genesis thing.
Oh, yeah.
And at the time, I was thinking like, man, this seems like it was a Genesis game at some point, or like maybe Sega passed on this or something, and it's just on Nintendo because like, well, that's where our other games were, so we naturally gravitated towards Super Nintendo.
It felt like every game, every third-party game that wanted to be cool on the SNES really played up the kind of the harsh guitar sound on the SNES chip.
I want to go back to the story though, because I remember it being giving the player a little more context. They really don't. I feel like that's all in the instruction book. And the explicit storytelling they do give you, I find it hilarious that if you want to read the sort of introduction to the game, you have to read it while a siren is blaring and the screen is flashing and there's like eight paragraphs are telling you about things. It's like, oh man, this could have been done a little better. But
yeah.
I do like – I think it's going for more for atmosphere than for very explicit storytelling.
Wait,
because
Dr. Light gives you all the context when you find his little capsules.
That's true. I mean, he just says like Gambare, Mega Man X, go for it.
But he also tells you like why you were created and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And the beginning of the game is like you had to be frozen for 30 years because of things. And I feel like they would be more ambitious, but I like the atmosphere more than like who is Sigma and who is this Boba Fett guy? Like there's no real context provided for that within the game, I think. Not a lot of context at least.
It's just enough to give you a sense that something possibly went down between the games that you played on your Nintendo and what happened here, which is a whole other topic. But it was just enough to make you think like, man, this got really serious all of a sudden.
So that's game mechanics. Now there's Mega Man History, X, Zero, Mavericks, the stages, and Sigma.
We kind of talked about Mavericks a little.
A little bit, but not fully. We haven't gone to that stage yet.
Mm.
We've seen it in the background.
Well,
like there's a hint of the stage that we have to fight.
If you use the game – I picked the last one. I'll defer.
Let's do Zero because I want to know what the deal is with Zero. There's a huge following for Zero, and it baffles me a bit. Maybe he is the Bishonen version of Mega Man
it's
with his beautiful – he's a beautiful man, number one.
I remember reading, I think, Super Play magazine back when Mega Man X3 came out, and they were like, Zero is Mega Man's girlfriend. She's really pretty and cool. You can play as her now.
I mean, Zero
was like, maybe it wasn't Super Play. It was one of those British magazines that I saw at the grocery store, and I was like, huh.
I can tell
I think Zero's a girl.
No. I mean, I can tell how they were trying to make Zero so cool. He is the kind of established veteran to the newly awoken Mega Man X, I'm pretty sure.
So here's my analogy. Zero is Mega Man's cool older friend.
Mm.
He is the Bucky to his Steve Rogers.
I see.
He is the tough guy who protects Mega Man X when he's a weakling, but ultimately dies so the hero can achieve his potential.
He makes a noble sacrifice.
And also, both of them star in a lot of slash fic.
Oh, that's true.
Also, he has a lightsaber.
Ah, you're right.
And I think that is one thing that a lot of people like. I always thought the beam saber was really rad, actually, and that's
cool.
Why I like Zero. And let's be honest, the character design is pretty cool. The hair is a little ridiculous. Actually, back in the old days, when the original Mega Man X came out, I thought that Zero had a cape. I thought that hair was a cape, not, not a ponytail. Actual hair.
Why does a robot need a ponytail?
It was a head cape.
Why does a robot need a cape? I don't know. But yeah, so
I don't know. Sigma has one, and it's really cool when he throws it off to fight you.
It's the same concept that goes into a lot of like aviation or military things.
Just why does a Gundam need a cape?
Needs to look imposing.
Lots
and
of Gundams
cool.
have capes.
Shoulder pads.
No capes.
Zero has those. He has boob crystals. Long hair. Maybe, yeah, I can see where the magazine got confused.
I forget what happens in the later X games. How do they reconcile him dying? Was he supposed to be dead forever? Does he come back at the end of
X? That's
forget.
Pretty much the entire plot of Mega Man X2.
Okay, yeah.
You reassemble him.
It's been a long time.
The X Hunters, three robots, go out to kill X by reassembling Zero and reprogramming him. Hmm. The funny thing is they didn't really need to reprogram him. They just needed to revert him to his original personality. Mm-hmm. Because
spoiler.
That is the retcon that was added to Zero.
Mm. I really
he
like
wasn't
that
Mega
retcon.
Man X's friend.
Let's be honest.
I think it's
pretty cool. Yeah. But he's a distinctive dude with a dark back, with a dark history. So I like Zero.
Here though, he's just like the sort of
he's
the Roy Fokker. There you
Jeremy,
go.
Watch your mouth.
There you
Roy
go.
Roy Fokker, sorry.
Well, that's an interesting analogy. Oh man, okay.
But he doesn't like pineapple pie.
That was a Robotech reference, kids.
It was.
Ask
yes, it was.
Or
Macross.
Somebody.
Makurosu, if you prefer.
And they, also, it's pine salada. Hello.
So I have read that Zero was originally designed to be the protagonist of this game, that it was not actually going to be a Mega Man game. And so that's why he's red and he like has a different sort of play style. But eventually, I guess the executives were like, you know, that's pretty similar to Mega Man, so why don't we push him to the side and make a blue guy who's more like Mega Man? And so
– was it Inafune who wanted Zero to be the
I believe
the main
he designed
hero?
Zero, yeah, if I'm
and
not mistaken.
They were like, no, it's going to be real different and Zero is going to be the protagonist. And they're like, whoa, hold on. It's a little too different. We need something recognizable here.
Yeah, but I mean you can tell that there was a lot of fondness for Zero because not only did he become a fan favorite, but he eventually went on to star in his own series. And ended up killing X as part of some incredibly convoluted plot line.
The Zero,
it gets a little weird.
The Zero games defy logic because you can't have a story with both a rebellion and a resistance. I'm sorry. You're just making things so confusing.
Star Wars does it.
But I don't know.
So Zero starts out here just as like, you know, kind of the aspirational hero. And when he dies and Mega Man takes up his mantle, then you know like Mega Man has achieved his potential. Mm-hmm. And that is kind of the whole point.
Also from a mechanical standpoint, the first time he arrives to save you from Vile, Vile is kind of calibrating your powers so that when you eventually fight Vile much later and you kind of kick his butt, you like, yeah, no, I'm strong, yeah.
It's probably worth mentioning that Zero doesn't show up that much in the game. He's only like there two or three times.
Yeah, yeah.
But when he shows up, it's really meaningful.
And his theme kicks in, which is very intentional, classic.
Rock.
Well, that too.
It's got like wailing guitars. Like that is where you've got like peak Capcom butt rock for Zero's theme.
It's ready to go.
Yeah, I mean that was kind of like how I calibrated the Super NES Mini versus original hardware. I'm like, can they do Zero's theme? They almost got it.
Almost.
It's pretty close.
Back when Mega Man X came out, I likened Zero to Proto Man because I mean, same color.
Yeah, like the big brother character.
Except Proto Man is mysterious and you're never quite sure what his agenda is. Well, it's pretty clear what Zero's agenda
is. Yeah, Zero's like the good guy. He's the hero. He's the rank S hunter. Mm-hmm. And everyone looks up to Zero. But Mega Man's destiny is to ultimately ascend and even exceed the abilities of Zero.
And that's one thing I love about the way those characters play off each other. And it comes across maybe more later on, but the whole idea that X, well, this might be better for the Mega Man X section.
Might be.
I'll save it. Well, but it does play off of Zero, so I feel like it's kind of sort of there.
Sure. Maybe the next stage we should take is X.
Here we are in the Mega Man X section. That they play off each other in the fact that, yes, Zero is this veteran who's been on a lot of missions and knows what he's doing and isn't afraid to take people out, take other machines out. But X is kind of this like walking arsenal that's also a pacifist. It's baked into his character to not really seek fights and want to fight, and he really just gets kind of you can sense this exhaustion in the character after numerous games that he's just like, I wish we had a better way to do this.
Right. What am I fighting for?
Yes.
I think is the classic line.
Yeah.
More emotion, Jeremy.
What am I fighting for?
What am I fighting for? Isn't that what it was?
I think so, yes. The high quality voice acting of the 90s.
This is not happening. I can't believe this is happening.
Wait, Mega Man, you must not fight Dr. Wily. I guess that wasn't next. So I think it is important to kind of talk about the relationship between X and Zero and how that evolved over future games, because initially, like I said, Zero is just sort of like the Roy Fokker character, but over time you realize he's actually designed to be the Mega Man nemesis. Mm. And starting with, I guess, the Power Fighters,
they
started to say, well, actually, Dr. Wily created Zero, and the idea was that he would destroy everyone. And, you know, when you get to Mega Man X, Mega Man's not there. Dr. Light is dead. There's no Roll. There's no Otto. There's no Eddie. So maybe Zero pulled it off.
Yeah.
But you know, in the remake, Maverick Hunter X, there's all kinds of like anime cutscenes added, like 20 minutes of cutscenes added. Mm-hmm. And they actually show Sigma, when he's a good guy, we'll talk about that later, discovering Zero sort of in a cave. And he's like a raving lunatic, and they put him down and then put him into service as like a good guy.
I think you see some of that in X4 as well.
And there's X4 or X5. He's having flashbacks. Like
blood on his hands. That's an X4. That's really, really started to play up. Like there is a connection here that's deeper.
And there's the W's flashing and stuff like that.
I thought that was really cool. Normally when they try to like explain what happened in between things, I get – my eyes start to glaze over. Like Clone Wars, I don't really need to know what happened in the Clone Wars, but please laboriously explain them to me. And I feel like Dune did that with a lot of the prequel trilogy books. It's like, I don't need to know how this got here. But in this case, I just hope they never like...
I'm a sucker for lore, and I love all of the little tidbits. The thing is that it is possible to overexplain.
Mm-hmm.
And Mega Man, for the most part, has been pretty good about not doing that.
Yeah. I think there's just enough like, hey, you know Wily built him. You know Zero went crazy, and you know he maybe fulfilled his programming, and Bass was super mad about it.
Yeah, they kind of lost the plot after a while.
And nobody called me on it.
It's okay. Why must we fight?
It's canonically Bass, I think.
It is canonically Bass.
Yeah. Is it actually Bass? Oh, my God.
Shut up.
I was so glad they kept that for Mega Man Legacy Collection, too. They didn't redub it. It's just the same crappy
English
voice acting. What was I going to say?
We were talking about...
talking about lore, man.
Yeah, and the in-between of like
Mega Man X6 was the where it went off the rails, and they tried to introduce a robot with toilet paper rolls on his head who might have been Dr. Wily's spirit trapped in a cyborg or something.
Okay.
And then totally dropped that plot line in the future games.
So
Ezok was his name.
Wily was resurrected as a toilet robot is what
maybe,
you're saying.
Okay. Maybe, but they really hinted at that heavily and then just kind of dropped it.
Oh, there's one. I'm blanking which X game it is, but it's like, yeah, Wily. Or is that literally what you just said?
Oh, they're Mega Man like, X5, you do have the two routes. And if you take Zero's route, you can you end up fighting X. But also there's like a scene where basically the holographic spirit of Wily is like, finally, you've come and you can achieve your true destiny or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's like they come so close to just like outright saying – it's Dr. Wily, guys. I don't feel like they name him, right? They don't say like, hey, it's Albert Wily.
No, but I mean you fight through portions of Mega Man 2 stages, including Quick Man's laser gauntlet, and there are big W's everywhere. So it's like, I wonder who this guy in the shadows is. Yeah. But anyway, that's later games. In Mega Man X, it's just X and Zero and Sigma, and that's good enough.
Yeah.
And X himself is, he's the main character. He's the main hero. He's a blank slate. And his entire gimmick is that he's the next generation model of Mega Man created by Dr. Light, but he has so much potential for power. He has limited infinite potential that he represents an enormous danger. So Dr. Light puts him into a capsule to run self-diagnostics and make sure he doesn't turn out evil and give him – in later games, it was retconned to the suffering circuit so that he – like basically he like is a self-flagellating monk of a robot. It's kind of weird, but
isn't he the only one with self-determination? Like he can do what he wants?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. I mean the contrast is in the original game – Rock decides to take on these powers because he has a strong sense of justice and he must fight for what is right.
Right. But whereas I guess somehow this is different in Mega Man X has feelings. So it's not the same.
When you turn on the game, it gives you like a rundown of his diagnostics where you can see it has – he has eight terabytes of memory, I think. I was just reading that today. I was like,
not
wow.
Not that much.
Yeah. It seemed like a lot at the time, but now it's seeming lesser and lesser.
Well, that's in the same boat as when I realized when I was taller than Mega Man X. I was like, oh. And now the idea that he's only 8 terabytes of data, it's like, oh, wow, my heroes.
I think in the movie Johnny Mnemonic, the amount of data he can store in his brain is very, very small now. I think most flash drives are much bigger.
1 gigabyte of data.
That's all the data in the world.
He is the next generation Mega Man. And one of the interesting kind of central premises of the series, I think, is that every robot in X's universe is based on X because even though Dr. Light, you know, went through the motions of a responsible scientist and said, what if X went crazy and killed everyone? I can't let that happen. He should, you know, do some self-regulation so that he's safe. Mega Man is – or X is dug up by a scientist named – an archaeologist named Dr. Kane, who's like, I found the coolest robot ever and I don't actually understand robotics, but I'm going to make copies of him and mass manufacture these Reploids and so it's going to be great. It's going to be a whole revolution in the world.
Seems like a great idea.
Is this information in the game itself?
It's actually in the manual, yeah.
In the manual but not
it's
in the game.
It's in the manual, not in the game.
That's the context that's missing. This
was back in the day when you got all of the context from the manual.
I just wanted to know because I didn't read the digital manual on my Wii U.
So yeah, so we'll talk about this with Sigma, but he's basically like the ultimate evil X pretty much, like the ultimate evil version of Mega Man. So the only robot in the series who's not based on X's design is Zero because he was designed by Dr. Wily.
Which again really suggests that something awful went down because if robotics had to kind of be discovered or this cool robot had to be discovered and it's buried, then I think not only it sends me down a path of not only did Zero succeed and like lay waste to them, he went bonkers and the world wasn't ready and that put a lot of people in distrust of machinery and robots in general. And a century goes by or whatever and then they finally go, well, if you can mass produce easy labor, now I'm interested in robots again. Then, as long as they're not themed after elements, please don't do that
again. No, we'll name them after animals and it'll be okay. Yeah.
Give them fangs, please.
I like your fanon and I wish to subscribe to your newsletter.
Oh, great. I've got a pamphlet on
it. what's really – I don't know if I like it or not, but they really took this idea just like to crazy extremes with future Mega Man games. And Mega Man Legends, it turns out basically – everyone is a Reploid. Like the human race died off and everyone's like a synthetic humanoid. Mm. And like Mega Man Legends 2, the guy with the Jesus dude you talk to is like the last living human being watching over the world from the Eden space station. And you kind of get like hints of that happening in the Zero series. So they had like a pretty dark and weird vision for humanity.
I was going to say, wow.
Like the human race kind of vanishes over the course of a few millennia in the Mega Man games and it's all because of Dr. Light and Wily. So it's probably better that in the Battle Network series they focused on the internet as opposed to robotics.
Got to jack in.
That's right. So is there more that we need to say about X? We talked about the mechanics.
How about his
upgrades?
Haven't
talked about his upgrades. That's what we haven't really discussed.
I suppose what I was going to say is yes, and connected to the upgrades, the whole main thrust of the game, the arc – is that he's growing, he's becoming better. And like I said earlier, it takes the concepts introduced in the original Mega Man of Mega Man is becoming more and more powerful and make that the core of the game. Mm.
Yeah, I mean that's always like the core of a progressive adventure action game. Like your character starts out as a weakling, but by the end you have God armor and you're awesome. And this actually turns that into the text of the game rather than the subtext or what the implication. And it, you know, Dr. Light's hologram actually speaks to you and says, mm-hmm. I knew this day would come. I'm sorry that you're being thrust into battle, but it's cool because I'm giving you gear and stuff and you're going to be awesome. So please achieve your potential and don't be bad. That holographic capsule thing starts to wear kind of thin by Mega Man X6 and you're like, yeah. Did Light really anticipate X would be in this many battles and need this many different kinds of armor? But okay,
like, sure. Put them all in one place at least.
Yeah.
Convenience.
Well, at the end of X5, one of the endings where X is like destroyed by Zero or something, a mysterious shadowy figure comes and repairs him and it's kind of implied to be like, Dr. Light's still alive. That's weird.
Yeah, that's weird.
I still have the idea that these things are hidden in a place where he will predict that this whale robot's going to go bad.
I knew
that he's never met.
I knew Chill Pengigo would go nuts. So,
well, Mega Man X and all the Mavericks already look like the coolest toys ever. I want toys of all of these guys. They are so great and toy-like. But getting the armor and the helmet and the boots makes Mega Man's toy-like design even more toy-like and better.
I mean, I think Bandai's made a ton of X characters.
I'm sure they all
exist. Like the different armor upgrades. And they're very hyper-posable.
I want the
like
octopus
each.
Because I love how he points at you and then points at the ground. Like, you're going down, buddy. It's so great.
All right, so we've talked about X, and I think we should take a break and then come back and find out who is weak to X. So I've input the password, and we are continuing from where we left off last game. So actually, let's revisit the X stage really fast. I think some people had some things to say. So we can do our second playthrough, look for the heart capsules.
Mm. I have two things to add. One, when we're discussing the story, I want you to put in a blaring siren for that entire time to make the Mega Man X experience complete. Number two, we went over the different parts you can get. So there are different parts hidden in various stages. There's three parts you can equip. I think you get an advanced buster, but they eventually will give that to you if you don't find it.
Yeah, I think Zero gives that to you at the very end.
He does.
When he dies.
Yeah.
Spoilers.
And you see half of his body. It's gross. But the boots let you dash. The armor lets you take more hits. And the helmet I found was really disappointing. I got it last, as I usually do in the game. I'm like, what does this thing do again? It's like, oh yeah, you can kind of break through some ceilings, but it rarely ever happens. Yeah. I wish there was a better use of that.
It's not even like the one in the Goonies where you can survive stalactites.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Yeah.
You can't protect them. Help you with armored armadillos, like the last bit? It helps you survive the rocks a lot better.
I think maybe that could be the one use. I don't remember, but it is fairly useless. I love how fully upgraded Mega Man X looks. He is so cool. Looking in a very toy-like 90s way, but the helmet let me down, folks. I just want to let the world know.
I was going to say that one thing that I really like about this is the fact that as you gain the armor, it is added to the design.
And yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm. They update the sprites. It's nice.
It's a really palpable visual indicator of progress, and I am a sucker for any game where you have visualized armor, so I love that they did that in Mega Man X.
Did that happen in other action games before? You saw that in RPGs. Like, I just played Draken for Super NES Works, and
I'm sorry.
I survived. It's actually a really interesting game, but we'll talk about it some other time.
But your
little character portraits do change to reflect the weapons and armor that you have equipped. But you don't really see that in action games because you have to draw, like, a lot more sprites than just a static character portrait.
Yeah. Am I crazy in that I swear the helmet... There's the buster attachment that gives you a second, like a third tier of charge shot.
Right.
But does the helmet also let you charge faster?
Oh, maybe.
I think that's a passive thing.
Maybe.
Oh, yeah. You totally do charge faster.
I think that's the helmet, too. Yeah. I might just be like connecting two dots that don't exist, but
If so, I didn't notice, but I'd buy it still.
It's like the golem's thinking cap in the Discworld books. Makes him smarter and faster.
Yes.
No. Okay. All right. So on to the next stage. We still have four left. Mega Man History, Mavericks, The Stages, and Sigma. So
your
pick.
I believe that X and Zero would be strong against Mega Man History.
You think so? Okay. Defeat us and send us back to the beginning. Actually, there's not too much to say about Mega Man History leading up to X. We kind of touched on it before, but we have talked about the original Mega Man series on NES. At this point, there were 5-ish games, and the NES games were kind of coming to their sunset along with the NES itself. X launched in 1994, which would be the final year of NES and Famicom games in both the US and Japan. So it was definitely time for a change and a move over to 16-bit games.
Go
ahead.
I was going to say that putting it into context, Capcom was changing for sure. I mean, Street Fighter II had come out a couple of years before and become the big game, the game that dominated a huge chunk of the 16-bit era.
How did you forget to bring up the Hadouken in the X section?
Yeah.
I totally forgot
the one
to bring
you
up
wanted to talk about.
The one that I want to talk about. Okay. And of course, there's a tribute to that in one of the Easter eggs, which is the Hadouken, which the way that you get it is that you get a capsule and then you have to die 5 times. And then I forget.
Really?
There are various ways to do it.
It's like an Armadillo stage. Yep. Mm-hmm. I'm forgetting some of the requirements.
I thought you just had to go back to the stage after defeating Armored Armadillo and then...
People are like, go back and die in it 5 times.
There is something about dying, I think.
The speedrunners kill themselves just 5 times and then they can have the Hadouken. But the Hadouken, you have to be standing on the ground and then to do it. But it's very hard to land. But if you land it, it kills anything in one hit.
Even Sigma?
Yep.
Yeah.
Even Rangda Bangda or whatever it's called?
Yeah. Rebanak.
Actually, can you hit the Rangda Bangda or whatever it's called from the ground? Because it's like the big wall in the background.
I'm thinking of something else then.
It was very much an awesome but impractical attack. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, if you could land it, obviously you had some serious bragging rights. And also, it was a cool tribute to a game that at that time was white hot.
Yeah, we're talking about Street Fighter. And as Street Fighter was taking off, Mega Man was sort of drawing less of an audience based on what it was doing and where it was. But this kind of feels like the Street Fighter-ifying of Mega Man, making it more rock almost.
It's the Street Fighter the spirit. 2 of Mega Man.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, Street Fighter 2. Capturing that same spirit. It's not a fighting game, of course, but it's just like, again, the butt rock, the more kind of aggressive
tone to it. The soundtrack even brings to mind Street Fighter a little
bit.
Yeah,
I mean, the analogy even holds up because in, you know, like Mega Man 2 and 3, when Mega Man uses items or summons Rush, he even wears red slippers, just like Ryu in the original Street Fighter.
Oh, you're right. Is there going to be a space to talk about the music in this game?
Talk about it right now.
I will, because playing this again, I forgot how memorable this soundtrack is. My only problem with it's a really
good
soundtrack.
So memorable that you forgot about it.
Yes, exactly. Well, I mean, the tunes are not as apparent to me as Mega Man 2 and 3 and 1. But as soon as they started playing, I started remembering, oh, I know this entire song. Mm-hmm. I know most of these songs. Mm-hmm. My one problem is the instrumentation is not very good. I hate that. I hate that like guitar sample thing. And I know someone has had to 8-bitify these songs online. I would love to hear arrangements of these songs in a more like NES sound font kind of thing.
Quality samples would have been okay too. I think this game uses a lot of like the default Super NES sounds.
Yeah, they're very muddy.
At least it doesn't have a lot of slap bass.
Yeah, I imagine
that was so abused back then.
There's a great like Mega Drive version of this, like a Genesis up version of the X soundtrack that actually works very well.
Wow, okay.
I can totally believe that.
I listened to it a lot over the summer. I forget the channel name or who posted it, but it's really good.
We'll be right back.
And played on real instruments, these songs sound great. Played on real electric guitars. I have the Mega Man X Rock Collection or whatever you want to call it. And they sound like they're designed to be played with electric guitars and like a real instruments. But I think Mega Man NES with its simpler or less technologically advanced instruments, if you will, maybe communicated that this kind of stuff a little better. I don't know.
So at the time, I did not have a Super Nintendo. I had a Nintendo, and the Super Nintendo was, wow, so amazing and technologically advanced, and look, those amazing sprites. And Mega Man X was one of the like ideals. Like I had to play that game. And the few times that I did actually get to try it out, just from the second that the title screen starts, where you have the immediate sting and the super high powered music that really gets you into it. Like the soundtrack to me was like, yes, this is what the Super Nintendo is all about. Look at how much more advanced it is than the Nintendo soundtrack. It's so driving and energetic and cool. I love this soundtrack.
I think even on the title screen, you shoot the option you want with Mega Man X. Like, I'm game start. I will destroy this text.
I should have looked at my notes earlier. Rockman 6 debuted in Japan in November 1993, and this game came out there a month later.
Wow.
So it's really like a quick handing of the baton. And the difference between the two games is pretty extraordinary.
Huge. Another thing about the music that I want to point out, I don't actually think that the boss music's amazing, but when you walk in and the ominous music, which was definitely not anything you would ever get on the NES, always really stood out to me. And I was like, oh man, I'm ready for this big fight.
I love, you know, the guitar samples don't hold up, but I love the like the synthesizer stings that have the echoey, like that's so, you know, Owner of a Lonely Heart.
Say what you will about the guitars in this, but Spark Mandrel's theme is still one of my all-time favorite.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just, it is full
Storm
on.
Storm Eagle has a great one.
I like Armored Armadillo too. Very good.
Mm-hmm. Very Gutsman-y.
So we're on to the final three stages, Mavericks, Sigma, and the stages. So what's next? What's week to Mega Man history?
Go ahead, Brett.
Go for it.
You're the guest.
I feel like it's time to talk Sigma. We talked about Zero and X.
Sigma it is. When Sigma was an interesting villain, it was here. It was this game.
I was going to say no because I don't think he's
That's
very
all.
Interesting.
So I never liked
he's
Sigma.
Really, I think he's really a good villain in this game and very well presented. Like I said earlier, he is the sort of like the evil id of Mega Man. He is Mega Man taken to his extreme in terms of power and in terms of like what would happen if Mega Man went wrong. Well, here it is. Mm-hmm. And the final showdown where you come into Sigma's room and you have to fight his dog. And then you defeat that. Like, he's got his own Rush. He has his own equivalent
that
of Rush.
True.
He is like evil Mega Man. But then, you know, you defeat the dog and he appears. He throws off his cape, draws his sword, and a great battle starts. It's really, really like in that one moment, you're like, Sigma is cool. And then every other game, you're like, oh, God, Sigma.
And he doesn't have the, you know, Saturday morning cartoon plot line of I'm going to build robots and take over the world. And now I'm back again to do my exact same thing. It's at least something that's more befitting of the tone of the game, which is like, oh, I think machines should be taking over the world and humanity's in the way. So we should have a freedom and you're all dead.
I, robot, am cool. You humans are not.
This is right after Terminator 2, I might add. And robots taking over the world was very cool.
Actually,
it was white hot.
The whole plot line, now that I think about it, Dr. Kane is basically like the dude from Cyberdyne who found the Terminator arm and is like, I'm going to reverse engineer this and create a robot system that kills everyone.
Yep.
I think my issue with Sigma is looking at a picture of him now that the entire game is full of these great animal robot designs, and his design is kind of uninspired.
He's like
just a bald guy with a cape.
It's like, what if Bert from Sesame Street what if Bert from Sesame Street joined KISS?
Yes, and shaved his hair.
I completely agree with you, Bob. The one thing that I was never able to engage with Sigma as an interesting or villain was because I was biased against him from the start because I didn't like his design. The bald head thing just didn't do it for me.
Yeah, the bald head thing isn't great. But again, I really like his overall design in that first battle against him where he is, you know, like a Mega Man-sized robot, a little taller. Yeah. But it's like a one-on-one kind of thing. It really feels like the culmination of this game. Like here is, you know, Mega Man taking on the antithesis of everything that he is and he has to overcome it with the power that he's accumulated along the way. It's a really great climactic sensation.
You think that mirrors that fight in Mega Man 1 where you fight another Mega Man?
You fight you?
Yeah.
But you don't get that sense of like that copy robot just kind of appears, whereas the whole game you feel Sigma's presence even when he's off screen, and you just feel like this all these events are because of Sigma.
Right, right.
And so when you finally get this showdown going, you're like, oh man. And also when X2 came out, it wasn't a given that they're going to do the Wily
thing.
Right,
because they've got the X-Hunters.
And you're like, okay, so there's a different villain. I'm not going to get tricked a fifth time. Not this time, guys. And then you get to Sigma.
So I'm going to make an admission. When Mega Man X came out, I wasn't actually a big fan of the fact that there was suddenly story, which is weird in the context of like, but Kat, you like canon and you like all these things. But I was like, what is this new story with the Reploids and Mavericks and Maverick Hunters? Like, what's going on here? And Sigma was kind of emblematic of that for me. I liked the old Mega Man story is what I'm saying. So
a little Saturday morning cartoon.
Yeah.
Maybe I was at that age where I still enjoyed the Saturday morning cartoon and I wasn't looking for nuance. I wanted the villain with the big goofy mustache who was going to rub his head and be like, ah, ha, 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 I'm back.
Stomp his feet in the ground when he gets beat.
Finistrate. So, yeah. I have to say that I really like what they did with Sigma in Maverick Hunter X, the remake for PSP. Mm-hmm. Like I said, they added something like 20 minutes of cutscenes, which normally I would just be like, what the hell are you doing? Yeah. But
do you want to see Chill Penguin give orders?
But it really gives context to the world and like the kind of ideas that they sort of had in the background but didn't state explicitly. Yeah. Like, yeah, you know, Chill Penguin is the commander of the 13th Polar Battalion, and here you get to see it. But you also get to see Sigma as a hero, as like one of the, you know, the Reploid hunters, the Maverick hunters, discover Zero. And then you get to see him kind of fall into evil as he's corrupted by what Zero – the virus code that he has inside of him. And you also get to see him kill Dr. Kane in a missile strike, which kind of – it makes me sort of interested to see what they would have done with future Maverick Hunter games because like Dr. Kane was around for a while. He was still a figure in Mega Man X3. Mm-hmm. He had some sort of minor role.
It retconned it?
Yeah, they
Is
were basically
Maverick
like
Hunter X the real canon?
I don't know. It's not a very extended canon since the game apparently didn't do very well and they never made a sequel to it.
Could it be because it was on the PSP and it was ugly?
It wasn't that ugly.
That was like a golden PSP era, right?
No, I feel like it was the wrong game for that platform at the wrong time. I think if that game had come out as a digital release in like 2008 instead of on PSP as a retail release in 2005.
HD remaster.
Yeah, I feel like it would have done a lot better in a different venue. But yeah,
between those two, I played a lot of – well, I finished Powered Up and then, you know, played through it numerous times. And then this, I think I played once – like played through once and was like, yeah, I'm good.
But it had Vile Mode.
What year was that? 06 maybe?
07, I think.
Yeah, that was –
it was 06.
I mean, we did a PSP podcast maybe 2 years ago and it was kind of stunning to realize like, oh, this thing had like 18 months of relevance in the US and that was kind of it. And I think this game landed after that window had closed.
Yeah, it was the wrong platform at the wrong time and it kind of helped kill the Mega Man series. I mean, they, you know, Capcom rebooted it with Mega Man 9, but it was sort of the end of like a technical and technological advancement for the franchise. I think we got Mega Man X8 after that, and that was – or X9? Was there an X9? I can't remember. Jeez. Mm-hmm.
No X9. Okay.
X8 was PS2.
It's all blurring together,
thought was before
Maverick Hunter X. Yeah, yeah. So Maverick Hunter X was kind of closed the door. So this is like the beginning and the end of a great era of
Mega Man. We haven't even gotten a Mega Man X collection in the same way that we've managed to get Mega Man Legacy collections.
I imagine – that'll probably happen
in
time.
Didn't we get one on PS2?
Yeah, we did.
We did.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's nicely done, and it has a couple of cool bonus games in it.
Yeah, I think it has. Is that the one with Battle and Chase? Yes.
The problem is that there's, what, 2.5 good Mega Man X games? And then after that, it's like, I don't know.
1 and 4 I love. I think they're both.
1 and 4 are amazing. And then
there
after
are some
that,
good Mega Man X games, some poor Mega Man X games, and some great ones. So,
and yeah. I think
there covers a spectrum.
Some point a couple years ago, I played through 2 a bunch. Oh, it was when we were doing a lot of those virtual console releases, and I was interestingly, like, tied in for, like, file all this paperwork, talk to Nintendo, get all these things done, and make sure the team in Japan knows what we're doing. And in the process of that, played through all of the games as we were submitting them, and played through X2 again a couple times, and for the first time finished Mega Man Extreme on Game Boy
really?
Color.
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
And that do we have to talk about that one? I don't want to.
It's like a retelling. And,
yeah, it's like just a re.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like Rockman Mega World or, you know. Yeah, the Rockman World games for Game Boy.
Yeah.
Mega Man, like Dr. Wily's Revenge.
Because it blends X1 and 2, mm-hmm. and then Extreme 2 blends 2 and 3.
Yeah.
But I ended up finding out that I think I played through X2 once as like a teenager and was like, okay, I'm good. I don't need to play this ever again. And then when I played X2 again a couple of years ago for all this virtual console stuff, I was like, actually, there's a lot of stuff in here I do like. I don't know why I was – in my head I was like really down on this game.
I think X was such a dramatic departure for the series. True. And then X2 came out and it was so much more of the same.
Yeah.
And we were like, oh, they're just back to their old tricks. They changed the context, but now it's, you know, just – rehashing the same things over and over again.
Everybody was really down on it when it came out back in the days. So,
and I never saw 3 till, you know, years later when all the rental shops started closing down, and then you like prey on them like a vulture. I'm like, oh, I'll give me all those.
Everybody was like, 3 is really hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is really hard. I've never finished it. So anyway, Sigma, we're going to wrap things up for him. But they dredged him up too many times. And by the end, like each time he appears, he's more pathetic because he's like breaking down and having a harder time reviving, which is an interesting idea. But it's not very satisfying to fight a final boss who like can't even form a sentence anymore. It's like, what if 45
Didn't he become
the boss?
A virus?
Yes, Mega Man X5. He like takes over the Statue of Liberty equivalent.
I mean, there is such a thing as overusing a villain, and there should be a point where you finally defeat the villain, they have a graceful exit, and then you can totally refresh the series by bringing in somebody new. And that might actually be one of the problems that both the original Mega Man and Mega Man X ultimately had.
X8 tries that. And I forget the name of the other villain.
It's not interesting.
Okay, great.
But you need to have a good villain.
I can't remember either because it's not interesting.
It's also possible to introduce a villain that everybody hates. I mean, so it's a two-part thing. You also have to introduce a good new villain.
Yeah, Command Mission did that too. It set the storyline 100 years in the future and totally dropped Sigma whatsoever. Like he's just not there. But I don't remember who the bad guy in that was either.
I don't either.
I just don't really care that much about X's storyline. It just drug on too long. It's mostly interesting for
I love
mostly
the lore.
Interesting for how it creates lore for the Zero games and the Legends games.
Yeah, I mean it's a huge part of it as like setting a base for all of it. And then I do love that PSP animation. It's like 20 minutes and it's all on YouTube at
this
point.
The animation is the best part of that game.
It's very pretty and
it's very well done.
To see Sigma and all of them before it all goes wrong, it's actually really cool. And I don't think it overstays its welcome at all.
No.
Like it's just enough to make you go, this seems
You don't have to watch the anime for one thing.
Yeah.
It's in a menu up front on the title screen and you can watch it there. And if you want to, you can, but you don't have to.
Yeah.
You can just jump into the game.
So these aren't cutscenes. It's like a featurette or something.
Yeah,
okay, I didn't know that.
It's called the Day of Sigma.
Mm-hmm. All right, so 2 final stages to go, and that is Mavericks and the Stages. Kat?
I believe it is time that we talk about the Mavericks.
Yeah. Mavericks are great. There's no more mans.
No more
mans. All the
mans
are gone. Mavericks are animal-based robots with Metal Gear codenames.
And not a weak one in the bunch. I mean, I think they're all pretty great.
Yeah.
They all have really cool designs. I love all of them. And there's still a hint of cuteness to all of them, which I like.
They all have a little bit goofy reactions, like Chill Penguin especially.
Oh, yeah. I love them mugging for the camera, too. When you select them, they're like the
Bob mentioned Launch Octopus, who when you select him or when you go to fight him, you come into his room and he points at you and then gives you like a you're going down with his tentacles. It's like it's – you don't think how can an octopus give you a thumbs down? But he totally does it.
He does it.
How the hell does he do it?
It's obvious that the designer – or the graphical artists of Mega Man have been waiting for the 16-bit consoles to come around because they were always trying to do really intricate and interesting designs on the NES. But obviously, I mean, the sprites were limited. So here they just go crazy and – one of the big things – I mean, we were talking very briefly earlier about how Mega Man – or X himself has a bigger sprite compared to the original games. But some of the – one of the big things about the Super Nintendo was suddenly you had these giant sprites, right? Mm-hmm. Like Flame Mammoth is huge and so detailed and so expressive and so interesting. Yeah, and they have a lot of fun with the Mavericks. Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of mid-bosses. I guess that's a stage thing. But just, you know, the mid-bosses in Mega Man was always kind of a thing on the NES. But you always had to fight these big cartoon robots against a black background because the robots were the background. That's just the limitation of the NES. Here you don't have that. So you have big sprites that fit more naturalistically into their environment and look more like the other robots. So it's just like you're fighting little guys and then there's a giant big gunship dropping little robots at you, or there's like this slime thing stretching all around the screen and getting bigger as you kill it.
The slime thing was such a cool effect. That's like cool. Everybody would always use that to highlight how good Mega Man X looked.
It was so good. And I love all the little – we did allude to this – well, we didn't. We straight up talked about it. But the little touches like when you go in a boss room and that little dun, 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 that music comes in. But what was cool was some of them like Spark Mandrill sticks out of my mind where the room is dark and you can see all the lights on him.
Yeah, Stink Chameleon is invisible.
Oh, and he's invisible, yeah. But I just love that he's the thing lit up in the room and then the lights come on. You're like, oh man, this guy's huge.
And the cloaking effect for Stink Chameleon was really cool.
Looked really good.
So I recently wrote an article as of this recording that I consider the Super Nintendo the best system ever made, and one of the reasons I think is just because so many of its best games just hold up.
Yep.
And Mega Man X is just a great example of that. This game looks phenomenal today. Like I was playing it on my SNES Classic and going, "Oh my god, this game looks amazing! It's so artistic and expressive." And the Mavericks are a huge part of that. Mm-hmm.
We kind of alluded to this, but I love the morphological variety in the Mavericks. You have Chill Penguin, who's smaller than Mega Man, and then you have Flame Mammoth, who is, you know, an elephant and therefore huge. And like each character, each enemy uses its body in a sensible way. Like Chill Penguin does not pose much of a physical threat, but he creates barriers and then dashes around the screen at really high speeds. Mm-hmm. Whereas Flame Mammoth pretty much just like stands there, but then he jumps at you and like his body is the weapon and it's really hard to avoid him. I think he's the only battle arena that scrolls. No, Storm Eagle also.
Yeah, there's some cool arenas in these. Most of them are just boxes.
It's not just a single room all the time.
And it's not just that Chill Penguin dashes at you. He does the little penguin on the belly slide. Yeah.
And on top of that, he creates little iced penguins. It's like totally the penguin from Batman, Batman Returns. Yep.
So this is where I say that Chill Penguin is my favorite, maybe one of my favorite bosses ever in like the entire series. Because, I mean, I like penguins anyway. He's always the first one that I fight, so I fought him a million times. Mm-hmm. It's a fun battle. Yep. I like any battle where it's encouraging me to do a Buster duel. I love Chill Penguin.
I don't remember which Mega Man fan site it was in the 90s, but there was a column, like a humor column published there called Irregular Fiber for the Maverick Hunter. Fiber for the Irregular Hunter, because Mavericks are called irregulars in Japan. Yes. So he like, you know, that's makes a constipation joke.
That's a good localization, by the way.
Well chosen, yes. But he really loved Chill Penguin and really played up like the idea of Chill, like he's, you know, like the pimp of Mavericks or irregulars, as the case may be. But all of them have great personality. I like that each of them fights in a very different way. And sometimes you get like little flashes that remind you of old Mega Man games, but they're done in different ways. Like Flame Mammoth, his one sort of projectile attack is that he flings oil at you and this glob of oil lands on a conveyor belt and you have to avoid it. And then if you, you know, as you're fighting him, he'll toss flames at the oil that'll cause the oil to create a geyser of flame, which, you know, it's really reminiscent of Fire Man and Heat Man from Mega Man 1 and 2, but it adds sort of a different element to it and also gives you a little bit more broadcasting than Fire Man, where the flames would just like show up at your feet and you couldn't dodge them. So it's really thoughtfully designed and kind of plays up like how what are the logistics of causing gouts of flame to arise from the ground? Well, he's setting oil on fire. So, you know, like his entire stage is a is an oil refinery basically or like a factory. So it all makes sense.
It all adds up, man.
So how do you feel about the fact that I mean, it's really hard to do almost any damage to Armored Armadillo. You beat him with the Buster. That's awesome.
And no capsule upgrades.
But for the most part, like if you want to beat him, you really do kind of have to use the actual attack that will knock his armor off.
Yeah, I don't even think he's the hardest one to beat without.
Do you think it's Sting upgrades. Chameleon?
Sting Chameleon is a complete bastard.
He's really hard to reach without the boomerangs.
Boomer Kwanger is also really difficult because he dashes. I mean, he's basically Quick Man, but like bulkier, and he's totally ground based, but he uses the same basic attacks, lots of boomerangs and lots of dashing attacks, and he really crowds you and forces you to avoid him.
What animal is Boomer Kwanger?
It's a bull. It's a beetle.
A beetle. Okay.
Oh, beetle. I thought he was a bull.
A bull,
yeah, it's like a beetle, yeah.
Yeah, he's like a stag beetle. He's got the horns. That's one of the coolest attacks in the game is where he like dashes at you. And if he catches you, he doesn't just – it's not like contact damage, which I am not really that big a fan of in games.
Yeah.
But in this case, it's not just contact damage. He grabs you with his stag beetle horns and tosses you in the air. So it's like, oh, yeah, I'm going to take some damage from that one.
I also noticed you mentioned contact damage. It's not as extreme in Mega Man X as it is in Mega Man, the 8-bit games. I feel like you got a huge chunk of your life bar taken out if you touched a boss. But in this game, it's not quite as extreme. I think
except Armored Armadillo.
Yeah, I guess it does vary.
It's hard.
Yeah,
there's a real disparity in damage dealing with that one.
But I didn't feel as punished when I touched a boss as I did in previous
Flame
games.
Flame Mammoth, I feel like it's underrated how hard he is because I often go to him right after Chill Penguin because obviously his stage is frozen. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But but Chill Penguin's weapon doesn't work on him.
Yeah.
You assume, obviously
shotgun
Chill Penguin's
ice, of course.
Yeah, ice on fire. Nope, that's not
fire,
the case.
Fire melts ice, Cat. What are you thinking?
Whatever. So I'm just assuming that I can take him out, and you're like, no. And that damn conveyor belt is so annoying because it makes it really hard to avoid his very large body that is landing on you.
And yeah, he does the Gutsman thing where when he lands, it creates a seismic ripple that causes you to lose your balance. So you fall down and you fall down on a conveyor belt that pulls you toward him. So yeah, it creates a new form of danger that you couldn't have on the original Mega Man.
I have unlocked the mystery of Boomer Kwanger that is not a mystery at all because this knowledge is widely available. Apparently, his name comes from the Japanese Kuwagata, which means stag beetles. So I guess they didn't change his name for, I guess it's a better pun. I don't know.
That was a mystery for 12-year-old Cat because I'm just going – oh, yeah, Sting Chameleon and Armored Armadillo and Boomer Kwanger?
I think they kept it because Boomerang, Boomer Kwang.
Yeah, the pun works.
It works, so even if you don't know what it is, it's
How did you deal with I'm Tengu Man?
I love Tengu Man.
But did you know
what
Tengu was?
And by that – well, first of all, I love that he was like, I'm Tengu Man. But also because by that time I knew what a Tengu
was.
Okay. So.
Mm-hmm.
Monster in my pocket.
I was a little more up on Japanese lore by that time.
I knew it because of Ramda 1/2.
One thing I also love about the Mavericks, and this is like a signature Japanese thing in games, comics, TV, is organizations. So it's not just that we have a bunch of bad guys. They have a name. They're Mavericks. The people who are after them, that's another organization. They're the Maverick Hunters. And we also have a logo for the Mavericks as well. They all agreed on what their logo is going to be.
It's like a Sigma with a fang.
And it looks so cool. Like we had there was a keychain of that logo for years, and it was like every time – like we'd be using them for giveaways, and every time I'm like, I want to take one of these, but it will be very obvious when I'm walking around.
So what you're saying is they all got together in committee and voted, and it was probably a 7-1 vote, and probably Launch Octopus was being a bit of a dick, you know, like he is. I mean, have you looked at that guy?
He doesn't have a voting up sprite.
No, he doesn't.
He can only vote down.
So he's not a Reploid Maverick, sorry, but I do think we should mention Vile in this section. We kind of – Cat mentioned that he's like calibrating Mega Man. But that is what the role he plays. He shows up at the beginning of the game, at the end of the introductory stage, and completely trashes you. It's kind of like the Ridley fight at the beginning of Super Metroid. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're really good and know the pattern, you actually can get him to a point where you technically win. But mm-hmm. then he uses a cheat attack and stomps you. Those games both came out the same year. So yeah. Someone was thinking like in the same terms, that same sort of anime drama. Like, I can't beat this ultimate powerful enemy. So, you know, you do like Ranma 1/2 and you go back and you run away and you train and then you come back and you fight maybe unfairly.
But here's the twist is that you still can't beat his right armor at the end. Like, you need Zero to come in and make his heroic sacrifice so that he can get him out and then you can beat him. Mm. He's presented as a formidable foe in this game.
And playing up to that part, I was kind of surprised, and I knew I had seen this before, but when you talk to Dying Zero, there's blood coming out of his mouth. So these robots are full of blood. Yeah. It's red.
Oil can be red.
They didn't censor that, though.
Oh, yeah. Well, as we all know, blood equals mature in video games.
That's true. This was Mega Man.
I just like the idea that all these robots are just full of blood, swishing around in their bodies.
We just put it in there.
How have we not talked about ride armor yet? Well, I guess that's for the final stage.
Yeah. Yes,
let's talk about the stages.
All right. So here we are wrapping it up. We're finishing the chain of weaknesses, talking about the stages. So there's 8 of them, plus the introductory stage, plus the 4 Sigma stages, and all of them are different from each other.
They are.
And a lot of them are very different than anything you saw in the NES Mega Man games. They really took this opportunity, like I said earlier, to play with the idea of level boundaries and how the flow through the stage goes. Like Boomer Kowinger is just a tower. Like, it's just nothing but climbing, and you're really making use of your wall jump and climbing ladders. On the other hand, Launch Octopus's stage is kind of like a series of 2 big boxes, and you can actually take a high route and find there's like oil refineries that you can climb on top of, or you can fight your way through underwater. And if you go underwater, then you fight some mini bosses, and there's actually secrets hidden beneath the mini bosses once you defeat them. So it's like, they tried to do that a little bit in Mega Man 6, where there were some like alternate routes, but it kind of sucked. It wasn't that interesting. Whereas here, it feels really organic, like. It encourages exploration and repeated play to kind of, you know, get the most out of each stage.
And as I was saying earlier, with the dash and the wall jump and everything, that dramatically increased the scope of the stages and made you encourage you to explore in a way that you really didn't in the other Mega Man games. But another I think important aspect of Mega Man X that is really revealed in the stage design is combat is a much bigger thing in this game. You spend a lot more time fighting actual enemies than you do platforming. I feel like platforming is a much bigger thing in the original Mega Man.
So yeah, there aren't as many cheap enemies appearing at platforms here. There are a few places where you're going to jump and something's going to come out of nowhere and hit you and knock you into a pit, but it doesn't happen as much.
Yeah, and in the original Mega Man, you spend a lot more time jumping around blocks that are flashing on and off or single blocks and trying to get around through it, whereas in Mega Man, it's much more like actually straightforward and you're just ripping through stuff with your Mega Buster or your Storm Tornado shot or that kind of thing. Or you're getting in your ride armor and punching things.
Yeah. It feels like for the first time, because the original Mega Man was still like, oh, we have a lot of arcade talent here. So it's a game, we know how to make games that just like beat you up a lot. And by the time they get to the X series, a lot of the design has shifted to like, well, let's just make a game that's fun to play. Mm-hmm. And you can actually exist in the stage and not be punished constantly.
There's also a few stages that are kind of built around set pieces that break from the formula, which I feel like they're good here, but they would become a problem in later Mega Man games. Like, I really like Armored Armadillo stage. You're on these little minecarts for a while, but when I play a Mega Man game, I don't want to play a shoot 'em up. I don't want to play an auto scrolling thing, and I feel like they got a little too into that in some of the later games in a way I don't like.
Yeah, X2 starts that with the ride machines. But what is a ride armor? You keep
ride
mentioning
armor.
It. What is it?
Well, I mean, Mega Man, or in this game, you get a mech suit that you can jump into,
robots
which is...
Robots and robots? I don't understand.
With a couple
against
of...
God.
Yeah, you're controlling a robot. I mean, it's like the Pluto and the... yes, but whatever. You're driving along and you're punching... And the first time you see a Ride Armor is when you see Vile in one. And it's very strong. He's rocketing it around the stage. And you're going, oh, my God, this guy is so tough. But then you get in the Chill Penguin stage. And look, there's a Ride Armor for you, too.
Yep.
And you can punch the little pill boxes.
Yeah.
And enemies can, like, hardly stop you. And you're like, yeah, I'm so strong. So Ride Armors... they are there to kind of empower you, especially early on when you are not that strong.
Mm-hmm.
Because this game has actually a very, very early on, like you have a very low health bar.
Yeah, it's pretty small.
You're very vulnerable. So the Ride Armor really mitigates that a lot if you kind of go in the correct order.
I don't think we mentioned that Mega Man sort of has Zelda-style heart containers that you find one in each stage to extend his health bar.
They're like the Tin Man's heart. They're like a little robot capsule with like a valve on them.
And the energy tanks work differently.
But they're shaped like hearts.
Too, in that you don't just pick up full energy tanks. You have to kind of grind for power-ups to fill the energy tanks instead of just getting a full one.
Sub-tanks.
Sub-tanks.
Super Metroid would do that also with its reserve tanks the same year.
Oh my
What's
gosh.
Going on?
And they look very similar, too.
Great minds think alike.
They're these big, like, lumpy, like, battery thingies, too. They're really cool.
And this was, you could go back in the stage, you would beat it, and you could go back in to search for, well, use one of your new weapons to affect the stage in some way, and then find a heart container that you couldn't get before.
And that was a huge part of its appeal was that, I mean, we already mentioned, you know, you beat Chill Penguin and you go into Flame Mammoth stage and now it's frozen. But there's other things like you would find explosive capsules that had the little fire symbol on it.
Yeah.
And if you had beat Flame Mammoth, you go, oh, yeah, I use my flames and da-da, I can get into the thing, or I can use Boomer Quanger's thing to collect the item. And that was a really cool extra dimension that was simply not in the previous Mega Man games.
Did we talk about how and if beating some stages will make different stages, some stages different? I feel like they had more of a plan for that and it only executed in a few ways in this game.
There's like two stages where it actually happens.
It's the Flame Mammoth and the Falcon guy.
Yeah. Storm Eagle.
Storm Eagle, yeah.
What happens? I can't remember.
I don't remember, but I know it's obvious in the Flame Mammoth stage. I don't know what killing Chill Penguin has to do with.
Oh, doesn't the airship crash or something?
Something like that. Yeah, I forget.
Which, by the way,
I love Storm Eagle's stage because it's like you're climbing to the top of an airport, like a civilian airport structure and going across scaffolding to fight your way to the command carrier that Storm Eagle has taken over to wreak havoc upon the landscape.
And
or
one of the best arenas that you're going to have too, where it just works really well. I especially, it's a small thing, but I especially love the shattering glass.
That's great.
Yeah.
In Storm Eagle stage, it's very cool. Yeah.
It's just, man, all these little details just like it's just reinforcing everything we've said in the beginning of they clearly had a lot of time to work on this or clearly put as much of their hard work and thought into it as they could.
And this is what happens when the influence of the graphic artists is so outsized that you get all of these amazing details in the look of the feel of the game. And you could tell that they were just in heaven because they were working with the Super Nintendo. There were so many details that they could put in that they couldn't do in the original NES.
He can use more than three colors.
Oh, my God.
He can be more shades of blue.
Yes.
Yeah, so I feel like we've pretty much hit on all the points. I have a huge number of listener mail letters, but too many to read right now. So I'm going to reserve those for a separate micro or something. I don't know. Thanks everyone who wrote in, but there's just not enough time to read all of these letters and I don't want to slide
somewhere anyone. Somebody is very disappointed.
They'll get their day in the sun.
I wondered why you brought all these things in here if you're not going to read them. But,
you know, all these sacks of mail. What's going on here?
I'm Santa.
This wheelbarrow's in my way.
I'm the Santa bird. Yeah, so any final thoughts on Mega Man X? First, let me ask you, do you think it's possible for Capcom to create a Mega Man game of this quality again? And if so, what would it have to be?
Yes, I do think that you could
Brett,
create...
I realize this is kind of a loaded question for you since I'm saying like...
Why don't you do it?
Is your employer still any good?
I mean, I think that possibility is always there because like... I feel like I had an analogy for this earlier where something hadn't been made in a long time and then everyone kind of started to think it couldn't be done. And then when it was done, it was like, oh, wow, actually.
Oh, the Star Wars prequels.
Oh, that was it. Really, really set me up. Man, I don't know. It kind of reminds me of like, you know, Metroid was gone for a long time. And then when it came back, it's like, oh, well, you can do it in first person. That's not going to work. And then it's like, oh, actually, you can. And it was great. And then we also got Fusion, which was, can they ever make one as good as Super Metroid? We could argue that. But I think Fusion was like very smart. In what they didn't try to do the same game again mm-hmm. and invite direct comparisons, mm-hmm. but anyway.
But they got them anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, there was supposed to be a first-person X game. It was like in development or something or in planning with a Spanish studio, not Mercury Steam, but apparently that's like the thing to do now is like, hey, Spaniards, can you bring back our Ailing series?
Oh, the Spaniards.
I think that there actually was a game that was every bit as good as Mega Man X, and it's called Shovel Knight. Which I think is the spiritual successor to all of those types of games.
I love Shovel Knight.
It's good. It's amazing in a different way, yeah. in my opinion.
I love Shovel Knight, but I feel like its levels drag on a little too long for their own good. I actually would like the levels if they were like maybe two-thirds as long as opposed to as long as they are. It kind of drags each stage. That's something I think X does really well, give you just the right amount of level content.
I got to the end of Azure Striker Gunvolt and really liked it, but I feel like it's somewhere between the X and Zero games. It's not quite a Mega Man X spiritual successor, and it's not totally Zero.
A big part of what made X so interesting was that it was a technological step forward. I don't necessarily want to see like a Mega Man X game that looks as good as Grand Theft Auto V or something. But like it needs to do something other than, you know, revisit the sprite art of the 8-bit era.
Yeah. I don't know. How did you guys feel about Sonic Mania? Like I thought that was – I had a great time playing it.
Sonic Mania looked really good.
Yeah. It's like it's kind of doing, hey, we made a new old game, but there's all these tiny little touches that it feels old game plus. And
it had so many great moments. Like the – when you go into – what was it? The second level where the giant Dr. Robotnik appears.
So
cool.
But is that the best Mega Man X can hope for, is rehashing the best bits of the 16-bit era? Metroid has moved beyond that. Metroid Prime 4 is coming out soon. Mario Odyssey is coming out soon.
So what you're saying is not just a tribute but a step forward for the series.
A step forward to the series. Something as significant as Mega Man X.
I think Capcom is especially good at this. Now, because I mentioned before, they have a great knack for sort of clearing the table and restarting a franchise when they realize things need to move in a different direction. We saw it with Mega Man, with Mega Man X. Arguably, Legends did the same thing, although it was not a commercial success. And
it was a creative success that's dear to my heart.
Exactly. And Resident Evil happened twice, and it's about to happen with Monster Hunter. I hope it's successful, but I feel like Capcom, they realize when they have to say, okay, we need to change everything to stay relevant. And I feel like unless there's some baggage that is unspoken, I feel like it's still possible with Mega Man. A better 3D Mega Man, I think, is still possible.
Well, what would that look like? I actually can't conceive of quote-unquote modern Mega Man, like a modern take on Mega Man, because it's so grounded in that time period.
Yeah, but I think that gives it a lot of...
X7 and X8 had a lot of troubles moving into 3D.
I think the obvious answer is to make it a Metroidvania or something to that effect, to really
like
open
ZX
it
games?
Up, get rid of the original structure and kind of go in that direction. Mm. So
Zero and ZX did that to a great degree. Zero, One, and
ZX Advent
especially.
X7 and X8 were 2.5D games like 14 years ago. I feel like we have reached the point where we can make a 3D Mega Man game that is bigger scope than Legends.
I'm trying to think of a third-person action game that is about a character that uses mostly projectiles.
Ratchet and Clank.
Oh, there you go.
I think using the Ratchet and Clank template would work really well for Mega Man. And I can't take credit for that. Nick Maragos, friend of the show, made that comparison a long time ago. He was like, why haven't you played Ratchet and Clank? It's basically Mega Man in 3D and it's amazing.
I mean, those games are all the same, but they're all great.
Yeah. But I mean, take that as a stepping off point because it does do the third person, ranged combat really well. Mm-hmm. It adds a challenge and gives you the ability to switch between different powers and get upgrades. It really does fit the Mega Man rubric a lot. So yeah, I think 3D action games, maybe they'll come back into vogue with Odyssey, Super Mario Odyssey. Mm. Like you haven't really seen a lot of those lately, but maybe the time is ripe for those to come back. Everything
really
comes in cycles.
Really want another Sly Cooper, man.
Wasn't there some news about Sly Cooper recently? There was something on US Gamer.
A movie?
There was an anniversary recently, and we were talking about where Sly, whatever happened to Sly 5. Sadly, it did not happen. is what it came down to. So yeah, but it was an anniversary recently.
That was Sanzaru, right? They were working on four and something else.
They did the collection in four, I think.
And then they came out and said, sorry, there's not going to be another one. Oh, by the way, Sly 4 ended on a cliffhanger, but what else?
Well, maybe we'll get like a soft reboot and now Sly will have a beard and a son. And it'll be really heavy and emotional and stuff.
And Murray is put in a capsule to weigh his reasoning capabilities for 100
years.
Well,
Murray, because, he's been relegated to a wheelchair, his parts can be the slow walking bits in the game where the narrative plays out.
Oh, Bentley's in the wheelchair.
Oh, Bentley. That's right. Yes. Sorry.
He's in the wheelchair. I mean, furry acceptance has never been greater on the internet.
That's true. Now of all times, now the time to.
I mean, I swear to God, everyone I know online is a furry. No one cares anymore.
Mega Man X was the original furry action.
That's true. Game. That's true.
These robots may not have fur, but they are furries.
I love all the cute robots in this game.
Yes. Okay. So I want to see a Mega Man X revival, and I want it to not follow in the steps of the most recent X games. I want it to be a clean slate, which I think would happen because Fujiwara is no longer there. Inafune is no longer there. No one's there. It's a chance for people to step in and do something new. And I love IntiCreates, but I don't want them to work on it. I want it to be a fresh take.
I mean, they had a good decade with the brand, more or less. So,
and I like what they're doing with Azure Striker Gunvolt and Mighty Gunvolt. Like, those are a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. They're very much the spirit of that classic Mega Man. But I would like to see something different. I don't want X9. Like, that plot line is just no. Just stop it. Just stop, please. Give us something fresh and new. Make us feel the way we did the first time we played X.
Sure.
I would be okay with revisiting the series with in an HD style, like really nice HD 2D art. And I think really phenomenal craftsmanship is timeless. And I think that there's still plenty of room for new and interesting ideas within the formula that Mega Man X and the original Mega Man had. So in that regard, if they came out with Mega Man X9 and they really put a lot of care and thought into the level design and how open they were and how much there is to find and the boss battles, and I would absolutely be all on board that. Mm. It's a craftsmanship thing, and that's the reason Mega Man X holds up so well. Mm-hmm. It's crafted so well, and in fact, this conversation has actually made me go, wow, I guess Mega Man X is the best Mega Man game.
It actually is.
Which I did not have that opinion even really going into this conversation, but after doing a bunch of research and talking to you guys, I go, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, they really killed it with this game.
Yeah, clear the runway for this hot take, everybody.
Whoa.
Cuphead is the new Mega Man. I rest my case.
No, it's the new Gunstar Heroes.
Don't frown at me. I've made my decision.
Yeah,
Dying on this hill.
Mega Man is more about the joy of kinetic motion, and Cuphead is very much about like memorizing very specific patterns.
I was just thinking of Kat's idea of just like what a glorious 2D Mega Man would look like, embracing Inafune's anime art style you would see on those boxes, like making a game that. That's what I want. And Cuphead comes the closest to that sort of
idea. If
they
could pull Inafune away from level 5 and just be like, okay, don't work on the game design, just draw for us. Because let us turn this into animation.
Cuphead borrows from those 30s cartoons that Inafune is drawing from because Tezuka drew from them. It's all a great chain back to this great art style.
4K, we can actually see the Oh, yeah. The Inafune fingers, that's it.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, the two middle fingers together.
Yeah, that thing. That's hard.
Yeah, I think because he wants to draw like
Spider-Man?
No, I think he wants to draw like four-fingered Disney-style characters.
Yeah.
But four is kind of like a number, like it's got some cultural stipulations. So he draws characters with five fingers, but effectively only four by merging the two middle fingers together.
But yeah, Cuphead looks so close to original Mega Man. I love it.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
I was always thinking more Bosco. But I am looking forward to reading your review of Cuphead because
– Oh, no. I didn't know I was writing one.
I assume.
Forward to maybe a micro about that. I'm kind of into it right now.
Okay.
Yep.
I mean, I figure if any game would appeal to you, it would be Cuphead. Mr. Animation Buff.
Mr. Dark Souls.
Whoa. Now I'm the one who didn't make a Dark Souls comparison.
Stop. No, I did it.
We got it.
All right. So reviving Mega Man X is the Dark Souls of game design. Thank you. All right. It's come full circle, and it is time to end this game. Watch the credits roll. Hooray. We beat all 8 stages. Thanks for indulging my really stupid idea for the arrangement of this episode. It was fun, even if it was stupid. This has been a Retronauts podcast, starring us, the Retronauts. I'm Jeremy Parrish. You can find me on Twitter as GameSpite. You can find me at retronauts.com, where I write and blog and create videos and publish books and other things like that. Retronauts, of course, is supported through listeners like you who go to patreon.com/retronauts and give us a little bit of money each month so that we can create this podcast. And there's something in it for you. If you give us $3 a month, you too can enjoy fine podcasts a week in advance at a higher bit rate with no ads. That's pretty cool. But if you prefer just to, you know, get your free content, that's okay. You're supporting us too because this podcast is ad supported on the public feeds. Check us out at iTunes or the Podcast One Network. Bob.
Hey, everybody. You can find me on Twitter as Bob Servo. I have another podcast. That's right, Jeremy. I betrayed Retronauts and the entire brand. My other
it's
podcast.
It's kind of retro.
It's actually.
It's like a cron gaming for cartoons.
It's a retro TV podcast. Of course, it's Talking Simpsons every Wednesday on the Laser Time Podcast Network. We're going through every episode of The Simpsons in order. I don't know when this episode is going up. We'll probably be at the end of season 6 going to season 7. And every episode is a new episode of The Simpsons. And you can find that at TalkingSimpsons.com. Or if you go to our Patreon, we have our own Patreon. That's Patreon.com/TalkingSimpsons. You can get a ton of bonus podcasts. Too many to list here, but we're also going through The Critic. And probably by the time this comes out, we'll have done most of The Critic in our Talking Simpsons style. So that's another incentive for you. Basically, give us both your money, Retronauts and Talking Simpsons. It's a great arrangement.
Brett, do you have a Patreon?
No, I don't have a Patreon.
What's going on?
But you can support the two aforementioned Patreons. That would be great.
What do you do for a living, Brett?
I read emails 400 hours a day. Been back at Capcom now for about 6 months, but I took a year and a half off and was over at the Laser Time side of things for a while. But been back now since April. And on the Mega Man side, Legacy Collection 2 just came out recently, so you can revisit all that Docville while
I really enjoyed it. It was it gave me new appreciation for 8, which I had always been sort of down on.
Yes.
But playing it again, I'm like, you know what? This game is actually really, really good. Yep. Aside from the jump, slide, slide.
Yeah, I went in like a soccer ball boss. I've always loved 7. Finished that again, and when I started 8, I'm like, oh, I don't think I like this game. And then by the time I was done, I was like, I was wrong. I put this to the side when I was like 18. I was like, I don't need this game anymore. And now
I'm vindicated.
I've always
been on the Mega Man 8 train.
Like, I think what got me finally was Frostman. When I saw him come on the screen, like, this sprite rules, and I wish every game looked like this.
I like Tengu Man. Not as much Clown Man, but I do like Tengu Man.
I didn't appreciate at the time that they scaled the sprites down proportionally to the screen.
Oh.
So you have all these like really beautiful, beautifully drawn sprites, but they're much smaller on screen. Mm. So it creates a more cohesive
it's
world.
It's just a gorgeous game.
Anyway, so yes, Mega Man Legacy Collection 2. I keep meaning to write about it for Retronauts.com, but I will at some point. I can say now that it's quite good and I really enjoyed it. Kat.
Hi, I'm Kat Bailey. You should go check out my website, usgamer.net, where we cover all of the happenings of video games. I have 2 podcasts. One is the US Gamer Podcast. I'm not on that one, but it's really good anyway. You should go check it out. And if you want to hear me some more, we talk about RPGs on Acts of the Blood God. We're doing a really cool thing right now. We're doing the Final Fantasy IX report, where we go episode by episode. We are playing through it and talking about each section.
All right. So. Do you have someone playing through to get the secret sword?
No, we are not doing that.
Someone should have been the sacrificial lamb for that.
My God, that's crazy. But no, Nadia's not finished Final Fantasy IX crazy enough. And it just came out on the PS4 as of the recording of this episode. So I said, guess what? Here's a code. We're doing it on the podcast. Let's go. So go check that out. Axe the Blood God. Find us on iTunes, Stitcher, and everywhere else.
And that's it for this episode of Retronauts, which the epilogue ended up being really long. Like, that's like an Assassin's Creed staff role. My God. We'll be back next week with another cool podcast. And some Friday, we'll be showing up with micro podcasts every other Friday. One of them might even include your letters about Mega Man X. Look forward to it.